Hi everyone, I'm just waiting for the slides to load here, and we're so excited to have you here today for our April webinar. We had a great one last month in March with Joyce and Alyssa, and it's been so fun to watch that and to see all of the chatter and conversation around it. And so today we're really excited because we get to have another webinar about ensuring equitable digital access with some of my amazing Follett and the Alliance for Excellent Education sponsored this time together today that we have to be able to share with our Future Ready librarians and other educators and leaders. And so thank you for that. And my name is Shannon McClintock Miller. I was a teacher librarian in Vandier, Iowa, and 3 years ago, I left the library to pursue working with schools and libraries and kids and librarians all over the country and internationally now too. I'm lucky because I get to hear all these great stories and see all of the successes that we're having in libraries, and especially working towards being future ready and working together in our schools. And so I'm really excited to be here today. And as we go through this webinar, just a reminder, make sure that if you're following and listening and you have a question or something that you want to share, do use the hashtags, hashtag Future Ready Libs and hashtag Future Ready. And at the bottom, you can also see if you have any questions as we're going and want to look at things a little more specific. I put the website too down at the bottom just to be able to get to our page on the Future Ready page. And so just make sure that when you're listening, I know that when you registered, you were able to post questions. But if you have any today as we're going, please put them into Twitter because I bet we'll have time for some questions at the end. And so we'll be answering those too, either during the webinar or afterwards as well. So I'm really excited today because I get to be with three of my friends who are, as I said, amazing Future Ready librarians. And my first guest that I would like to introduce is my awesome friend, Casey Boyd. And I will let you go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Casey Boyd. I'm also known as Boss Librarian or the Audacious Librarian. Currently, I am working for the Washington, D.C. public school system at Jefferson Academy. And previously, I worked in as a library area library coordinator for Chicago Public Schools and also East St. Louis Public School District in East St. Louis, Illinois. So, greetings and welcome.
Thank you for being here with us. And now we'll go ahead to our friends in Nashville, to Stephanie and Amanda.
Hi guys, I'm Amanda. I'm here today, so I'm excited to oh, sorry, that's Stephanie actually. Stephanie?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. My name's Stephanie, and I am a librarian at Harris Hillman School, which is a school for students with all severe physical, medical, and intellectual disabilities. So it's a great place, a unique place. We serve students ages 3 to 22, so we span the whole age range in the schools. And my students can't traditionally access the library in the same way that everybody else does, so we have to kind of change things up a little bit to ensure that everybody gets access.
Hi guys, I'm Amanda, and I am a teacher librarian here at Hume Fogg Academic Magnet in Nashville, and we serve grades 9 through 12. And our kids tend to be, we are the top like public school in the state, so there is a test to get into here. Our kids do pretty well here. We have kids from all over Nashville. So I'm really excited to talk about equitable access with you today, because that's definitely something that is really important to all of us here. And that's something that I work with kids every day.
Thank you. We're very excited and fortunate to have you both with us to hear the story of where you work. So thank you so much for being with us today. When we look at our framework, and this might be something too, that if you have questions that come up or you want to see where it falls within the framework and within this wedge, it's great to look at this and even look a little bit more specifically too at that bottom section of the framework. Because when we're talking about ensuring equitable digital access and providing and advocating for this access for connectivity and digital services and our libraries and information and resources, just like our three guests were saying, it's something I think that I'm excited to learn more about today and that we can all strive to do the best job that we can every single day. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for being here, and I can't wait to hear your stories. And we're going to kick off our day with Casey and her story about being a librarian. I think we're going to talk a lot about being in Chicago today.
Okay, thank you. Okay, can everyone see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Well, greetings, fellow brother and sister librarians in the struggle. My name is Casey Boyd, and I am a library media specialist currently at Jefferson Middle School, which is located in the Southwest Washington, D.C. Neighborhood. And while this is my first year working at Jefferson and working in D.C., I'm in the implementation phase of developing a library culture at this school that would greatly impact learning and instruction. When I was hired, principal was very honest, and he said, you know what, we've never worked with a certified librarian. So it's going to take time and patience on the part of the staff and part of myself to develop this library culture. So it takes a good minute to get everything up and running the way that I want it to run. But my presentation today is really based on off of my rich experience working at two Illinois school districts. And the first one was in Chicago at Wendell Phillips Academy High School. The second one was in downstate Illinois at East St. Louis School District 189. Now, today you'll learn how I was able to ensure equitable digital access for my students at these schools. So, growth. Oftentimes when I observe that my students were ignored or written off by district leadership or the surrounding community. At Phillips, this was really, really prevalent because Phillips was one of those schools that was located in Chicago's most challenging neighborhoods. East St. Louis, on the other hand, was also in a challenging neighborhood, but also they were not presented in the media, the local media down there, in the most positive light. So there were some negatives that were there that he had to try and overcome. Despite this, I believe that my students should not be judged by the color of their skin nor their zip code. Now, I wanted more for my students, and I wanted them to navigate technology beyond their favorite games or apps. And I wanted my students to have the same opportunities as suburban kids, especially in Chicago, in using digital tools. It is this access that I felt that would support their academic progress and post-secondary success. So I devised a lengthy and detailed plan to reach my ultimate goal. So here's a couple of things I want to just pull out from that plan that I have. Now, the first is I had to look very hard and identify deficiencies. I had a lot of great ideas, but I had to start at square one. I had to take a hard look at my library and evaluate the existing library program. The lack of computer hardware, funding, access to digital learning applications were the greatest deficiencies that I saw. Now, next then I had to battle the archaic view from educators within the learning community about technology in the library. You know, my favorite statement that I constantly heard over and over again in East St. Louis was, the children should only be reading in the library. You don't need computers. They're just best for using for test. You know, the computers are best used for testing, just focus on those books and get those reading scores up. You know, my nickname is the queen of the side eye. That's when I gave those side eyes. I'm like, really? You got to be kidding me. You just said that. You know, access, you know, was to for the kids was also a big challenge because both districts fostered a heavy test prep environment. And let me tell you, it was not easy to chip away at those layers of miseducation, but I did it with a lot of re-education, patience, and a sense of humor. I also had to remind a lot of these district administrators that were making those money decisions that because of the students living at and below at the poverty level, if they didn't have Wi-Fi, if they did not have the hardware, a computer or a laptop at home, they had nothing to work with. So sometimes the school was the best resource for them to come in and get their work done because it was free and they were entitled to use it. Now, I had to advocate for resources. Now, I wanted to provide my students with access to technology that would impact their academic success while addressing their social and emotional needs. I spoke a lot to decision makers within the district, giving presentations, sometimes having that 3-minute elevator speech, which is extremely important for librarians to have. It's a very valuable tool. And, you know, I had to also share examples of the work of other successful librarians that were demonstrating a lot of the same things that I wanted to do for my students that I was working with. You know, initially it was difficult obtaining hardware and convincing the decision makers to let go of that money, but I continued and I just did not give up. I wrote grants, I solicited donations. Sometimes in the, you know, iTunes donations was extremely helpful for me because I had a lot of Apple products. And then I just appealed to the school board for funding, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. I had an advocate sometimes that went in and advocated for me. You know, whatever means just to get my voice out there, that's what I used. And sometimes I even produced student artifacts. And when administrators started to see this, they slowly began to jump on board. So one of the digital resources that I really enjoyed using that really helped my students in their specific circumstance that they were in was called Gale Cengage's suite of digital resources. Now, for me, it was a great tool. I had students that ranged from special ed education, reading on a first and second grade level, all the way to students that were in AP classes and they were sophomores, taking college credits as a senior, and they graduated technically as a sophomore when they graduated from high school. So they had college credits. So I had a wide range of spectrum of kids on the learning spectrum. So I wanted something that would be supportive of their learning. For the most part, Gale really fit all of the needs of my students to conduct simple research and inquiry activities. So you have Gale Kids InfoBits for kids K through 5, Gale Opposing Viewpoints and Context, and Gale Student Resources and Context. Extremely helpful. And the kids like it because it's tiered. If a student's not reading at a middle school level, they can drop down and they can use Kids InfoBits and still get that valuable content that's needed. If they don't understand how to pronounce a word, you know, then they can have the text read to them. You know, these are tools that are often you see in other applications and other competing vendors. But for me, I've had a really, really, really great run with Gale and just their entire team of supporting the things that I wanted to do with my students. Now, these databases, you know, they're excellent, they're authoritative, they're aligned with the K-12 curriculum for my school, and most importantly, it fosters critical thinking. I love that aspect, really getting the kids to debate about current events and what's going on in today's society. As you can see in the critical thinking questions box that was found on Gale's Opposing Viewpoints and Context. You know, these are issues that are going on today in our society, and our kids can have those discussions about them. So I really enjoy that. But in particular, my students enjoyed the access my library app, because they were able to use this application on their phone, go to the public library on the weekend if they wanted to, you know, or they could go anywhere with Wi-Fi and they could still do their assignment or do some light research. And I'm telling you, I had students that were so determined to get these their assignments done from their teachers that they had to use the cell phone and the app in order to find the content that was needed to plug into a research paper or some type of paper that they were writing. So that Access My Library app is great. So the next slide is very simple, but it's hard. Mahatma Gandhi said it, to lose patience is to lose the battle. Okay. It sounds easy. I had blood, sweat, and tears many times dealing with difficult administrators and sometimes co-workers that just didn't get it. And it's sometimes, as much as you educate people about the library and our skill base, you know, people just don't get it. You know, you're going to encounter those people. They're clueless. Some are clueless about our skills. And I used to get really angry, but now I know that, you know, expect this, that you're going to run into these people, because in time I matured, and it took time for me to understand that sometimes people are just not going to ever understand. So my advice to you, when you're trying to go through this journey, just be patient. You're dealing with people. So back to the kids, my favorite part to talk about in the presentation, train a small cohort of kids. I know I'm running out of time, so I'm going to hurry up through these last couple of slides. At Phillips, I had two clubs, called the Behind the Pause News Crew, and the kids shot their own TV news program using iPads and edited the show using a MacBook Pro. And the way that they came up with the show is because they wanted to demonstrate, you know, hey, we're Bronzeville kids. You know, we're oftentimes, you know, ignored and written off by the city and by our own school district, but we're doing positive and good things at our school. And that was the goal that they had when they created the program. And I just supported them. I had the hardware. I'm like, let's go, let's do this. You know, also there was an anime club, not only at Phillips, but also in East St. Louis. And so with these kids, I trained these kids how to use the technology. And from there, they shared it with their classmates. So, you know, I encourage you when you're, you know, working with trying to be very equitable about, you know, having kids gaining access to technology, allow these kids to be creative. So, you know, you got to listen to them. They did the Behind the Pause program. They started to make their own AMVs because they love a lot of the anime and manga books that are produced. And then this was a really creative move. I allow kids to have access to our school's Pinterest page. And when the Honor Spanish class went to Spain, they took pictures and uploaded content to the actual page for our Pinterest site. And so they documented that entire trip. You know, and that was really cool. A lot of people are like, oh, you did it. No, the kids actually did this, and they did everything. So I'm really proud of them. So the last is share your success stories. You know, I know some people are not very outgoing in terms of they feel like they don't want to boast about what they're doing. Look, you're going to have to toot your own horn, because in life, sometimes people do not toot it for you. So in East St. Louis, when I finished a retrospective conversion project for 8 schools and led the librarians through getting all those books into the catalog and checking out books and having the kids take books home for the first time in the history of East St. Louis. Do you know that they checked out over 15,000 books by the end of the school year? I made sure that I presented at the school board meeting, and they included us in librarians in the end of the year color brochure that went out to the community and the parents. And as you can see, I'm holding that in my hand in that picture. So that presentation is also online if you Google it, because it's public. But see, these are the things that, you know, when you advocate for kids, you work for kids, giving them that access to technology and resources, you know, kids will take off and soar. So you've got to do these things about, you know, promoting your program and really demonstrating, hey, we did something great and here it is. So success, you know, just continue to grow, continue to seek out people who have programs that are similar to yours, continue to just take a risk and try things, because the only thing you can do is go up, you know. And I wish you all the best of luck. You'll be able to find me online. If you have any questions, you can always inbox me. Now I'm going to stop. So I'm going to pass this off now to Stephanie and Amanda. So
awesome.
There you go.
Thank you for sharing.
Well, hi.
She's frozen.
Oh, can you see it?
Oh, there she is. Okay. You guys can, thank you so much, Casey, for sharing. You're always so inspiring to hear what you do and advocate for, and especially the stories about you and the kids. You made such a difference in their lives. So thank you for sharing all of those things. And as she said, her information will be online, and we'll have some time too for some questions, but please reach out. I know that there's been some comments too as you were speaking, so you might want to check those out too. So we'll let now the friends from Nashville take over.
All right, are you ready, Stephanie?
Ready.
All right, so I'm Amanda Smithfield, and I'm at Hume Fogg.
Your slides aren't showing
yet, Stephanie. Though.
Ooh, weird. Okay. Glad you told me that. Okay. Let's try it again.
There you go.
There we go. How about that?
Yep. Perfect.
Yay.
And I'm Stephanie Rausch. I'm at Harris Hillman School. And these are some of the things that Amanda and I talked about that we do to meet the needs of all of the learners. Amanda and I kind of work with the opposite end of the spectrum. And so we chatted beforehand and decided that there were a lot of things that we did similarly. So that was, these are some of those things. So at Harris Hillman School, as I said, we are a very unique environment. And the way that we work to ensure equitable access is through adaptation. And so the first slide you can see is about adapting the space. We were really fortunate last year to receive a new library through a partnership with Metro Nashville Public Schools and Limitless Libraries. And so you're seeing some pictures of some of our great new space, which is absolutely fantastic. We have wide open spaces, you can sort of see, because we have students in wheelchairs and in positioning devices. And so they take up a lot of room. And when coming into the library, it's important that everybody be able to get in there and get to class and have enough room. So you can see the wide open spaces. We have a garage door on our classroom, which is actually open right now, so you can't see it in the picture, but that's a great way to get the kids in and out of the classroom. And yet I can still see into the library space in case anybody needs me. Mm-hmm. We also have an auditory signal when the kids come into the library that says welcome to the library, so that the kids know where they are in space. A lot of our kids have trouble with transitions or have visual impairments, and so that allows them to kind of know where they are and understand that we're moving into the library. And because my kids can't just come into the library and access the materials like typical students do in typical schools, I've tried to make my library very experiential so that kids can come in and experience things rather than just books. And thanks, Amanda. The next slide is adapting the materials. So it's kind of hard maybe to see, but I'll explain what's going on here. The top slide is called an adapted book. And so I take an age-appropriate book and read it and summarize it and then add textures or explanations to the pages so that as the kids are being read a book that is appropriate for their age. They actually have a summary that goes with it that they can read again and again on a regular basis so that they get the storyline and they have materials that kind of help them understand what's going on or the main ideas. A lot of times students with severe disabilities have limited life experiences. And so something that seems really obvious to me, like a tree, isn't necessarily obvious to them. And so by adapting the materials, it allows the students to kind of have a better understanding of what it is that we're talking about in the book. The second picture is character cards that I do for classrooms. So as I'm reading a book to a class, every time a new character comes in, we bring the character card back out, and that gives the kids a real tangible understanding of who we're talking about. And, oh yes, I remember that character. And then I also will do sometimes sounds that go along with different settings so that the students can understand, okay, we've switched back to this place. We're on this planet now, or we're at home, or things like that. And so those are character cards. And then the bottom picture is also a different way of adapting a book where we take a bag, it's called a texture bag, and we just put as many materials in there that go along with the book that is similar to an adapted book, but it's not a summary of the book, it's just the materials that go along with that book. So we do a lot of adapting of materials to make sure that the kids really understand what's going on and what they're reading. And then the next slide is adapting for the curriculum. And so I try to work with the teachers and the school to kind of make sure that we are hitting all of the curricular points, but we're doing so in a multi-sensory way so that our students can understand a little bit better. I find my students do better when they can touch things, when they can experience things for themselves, rather than it just being an explained topic. And so you can see in the pictures, this is our makerspace. I have a makerspace that teachers can come and sign up for. And we do lots of STEM activities that are really multi-sensory. So we made magnetic slime to talk about magnetism. The picture, the students are having magnet races using little cars and things like that. So you can see some of the pictures of our kids exploring. And then our next slide is a little bit more adapting. I also do a lot with the smart board. So that really helps the kids kind of engage and be able to interact with the materials that we're using digitally. And then I also, the bottom picture shows our tour of the countries. We do a sensory tour of the countries in the library. So any individuals that come in, a lot of times our kids will walk with the PT around the building or do some of those gross motor type skills. So they can come into the library anytime and they can access this. And so in this case, we were learning about India. So we have tastes and smells, touches, sounds, videos, different things like that, that the kids can interact with to really kind of get a feel for that country. And so those are some of the ways that I take what the teachers are doing in the classroom and adapt in the library to kind of tie in with that so that there's extra learning happening in the library.
Yeah, that was great, Stephanie. Thank you so much. So I really want to talk about my school and something that sounds really obvious, but something I want to challenge all the viewers to really think about. So I teach an academic magnet, and this school has a lot of projects. So the expectation is that students are going to work on these projects a whole lot in their spare time and, at home, basically. But imagine if you are a student here and you don't have that access. So what can I do to help those students out especially since I can't necessarily guarantee that at night that they will have all the items that they, all the, you know, things they need to have that equitable digital access. So one of the things I've done is I've adapted my time. And so I do have extended hours. I mean, if you had a clerk or if you had another librarian in your building, it could be that you might share those duties with the other person. So I do have extended hours. I'm here from 7 to 4:30. I do that. Our doors open at 7. So even though school here is from 8 to 3, and I don't stay to 4:30 every single day. But a lot of times, at least a couple times a week, I'll stay to 4:30. And listen, I'm getting work done too. But it is available for kids. And I make sure that parents and our faculty and the students know when I have my extended hours. And students, I'm able to have it open then and to let them know that this is a great availability for them. So say that, you know, depending on your situation, you may not be able to come in that early or stay that late. One other idea is to have a flexible lunch and actually allow kids to come to the library during lunch. So we, at my school, we do have just one lunch. So everyone goes to lunch at the same time. And students can come to the library during lunch. And this is really a great time for them to get work done, to work on these projects, and to access digital resources. So that's another thing I would, you know, like to promote. And if you are in a lunch schedule and you think, oh, that's never going to happen, you know, ask students to, you know, help you promote this idea, especially if you have examples of where students have not been able to finish projects because they were lacking that access. Then that is a great way that you can help advocate for that. So one of the things that I really think helps here is that I do have these extended hours and we do have a flexible lunch. And so it really does mean that students do have a great amount of access to their library resources. And while many of my students do have, almost all of them do have a smartphone, that doesn't mean that they necessarily have, you know, they don't, there are items I have here that they don't have at home. You know, not that many of them have a 3D printer at home. Or there may be a specific program that the library has that they need access to. And so they know that they can come in during those times and access those. The other thing I want to talk about, and I want to encourage you guys to think about, is what I've done here. And we are not a Title I school, so we do have computer carts. We are not one-to-one. So some kids do have their own computer, and I do have carts that they can borrow computers from in the library most days, not when we're testing like we are on the computer like we are this week. Casey talked a lot about writing grants, and grants are awesome and great. But what can you do, like, when you don't have, either you haven't gotten all the grants you want, or for whatever reason you didn't get that grant, but your kids still need resources? And maybe they have a way of doing something, but maybe if they had more resources, they could do an even better job. So in my situation, I've really depended on outside partners to help. So every year my students there's a variety of video projects that they do. And like I said, many students have smartphones and they can do a fine job on their smartphone. I mean, what people can do on their smartphones now is absolutely amazing. But these are 14 and 15 year olds. And so a lot of times they aren't aware of all the different things they should be aware of to make a really effective video. So I called upon my friends at the public library here, the Nashville Public Library. And we're really lucky here in Nashville because we actually do have this partnership between the public libraries and the school library. So we work really closely together, and kids can actually order items from the public library and they get delivered to school. So that's super cool. And that has really helped to form this relationship, this close relationship between us. But many public libraries actually have started, they have really good team studios in them. And so that is what our public library here in Nashville has this really great studio and a lot of the branches of the library. And so they have over $1 million worth of equipment. They have amazing equipment and they take that show on the road. So we were able to have, we actually had their mentors come over and they taught kids during lunch how to make a better video. And so that was really great. So they gave them lots of hints. They showed off all the supplies that they had. Even better, you can see here in the second picture here that they actually came over and they came over and they actually helped the kids to do the editing. So not as much of the filming, they kind of taught them how to film, but then on the day that the day before the project was due, kids were able to get like basically professional help editing. And they could also use all the tools that the public library had bought for these special laptops. These laptops were loaded with the entire Adobe suite, all sorts of equipment, all sorts of programs. And they were actually really able to help kids to make a much higher quality product. And so everyone left this being really, really happy about how successful that it ended up being. Kids got help. They were able to turn in a better product than they would have otherwise. But then also the public library was able to kind of show off what's in their studio. And just for you to get an idea of that, look at this, at what they all have. And this is from their teen studio here at the Nashville Public Library. They have so much stuff and so many different things that kids can use. And they did not bring all this stuff over. But what they were able to do is to say, hey, we are just around, we are a block away from Hume Fogg and we have all this equipment and you're welcome to use it. And not only that, not only are you welcome to use it, we will show you how to use it. So I guess I really want to challenge you guys. It doesn't have to be like the public library here in town, but is there someone who, you know, has some sort of video business? Is there someone who has started, you know, a wedding photographer that you know? Who can come in, help teach your kids, help give them access to something that they may not have access to without that person coming in? Also forms great community partnerships. You're able to bring the public in and let them know what you're doing. And it just creates a lot of goodwill. So I just want to be really encouraging. Reach out to others and just really be encouraging for them to come in. And who knows what could happen. But I'm hopeful that you have an experience like that I've had here, where with our partnership with this outside organization, kids have been able to have access to different programs that they wouldn't have otherwise. And while some kids already have access at home to those programs, what this has ensured is that all students here at Hume Fogg have access to the programs that, in this case, the public library has. And that has been really instrumental in making sure that kids are able to do really great projects here. So I'm going to turn it back over to Shannon here. She'll finish up for us. So,
all right, on mute. There we go. So we have some time just for a few questions before we go over just some housekeeping type of things. And so I'm going to read these and you guys can choose who answers them. But first, I just want to thank you for sharing your story. You are both in such unique and wonderful libraries and the things that you do. I want to come back to Nashville so I can visit because it's really inspiring and just awesome. And I love it. And I think that the public partnership that you have is just so amazing. But even if you're in like a small town where I was in Van Meter, Iowa, with 1,000 people, you know, we had people who were, you know, farmers and craftsmen and, you know, maybe cook in our school kitchen who, you know, had so much to offer as well. And just like you said, like challenging people to reach out and find those connections, because we don't have to be an expert on everything to and I think that, you know, it doesn't even have to be something that is in real life. I'm here with my husband at the Capstone meeting today, and Capstone Publishing, the art department, used to Skype in with us. And, you know, their art department makes the wonderful books, being able to, you know, to Skype in and have like the people that make the cake judge and help the cake, the kids decorate cakes so they can sell them and raise money. You know, the people that are creating the videos, just like you said. So think outside of the box too. If you don't have these right down the street, it doesn't always have to be something too that maybe is, you know, just face to face. You have so many opportunities now to give your kids access to all these opportunities virtually too. So I think that's really exciting for us. But I want to go over just a couple of questions. Here is a good one, and you touched a little bit on it, but I think this is something that a lot of people, I hear that they is a concern to them and they worry about. But Barbara asks, she's from Texas, and she asks, what are options for students that have the devices but not adequate internet connection at home? Many of our families have limited data plans, and so the students are not allowed to use the internet at home.
I can answer that.
Remember, if you're on, Casey, I think you're muted.
Oh, I'm muted? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, how's that?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of touched on that a little bit. My students, I had high school students now, and they were very, very, very resourceful. I kept the library open pretty late because I lived in the same neighborhood. So I could keep the, it wasn't like a commute home for me. I was like less than 5 minutes away. So I kept the library open late. And then after hours, the kids had a tendency to do this. They would use the public library. There were a couple of coffee houses, McDonald's, public entities. That's where they would go hang out. So I was not surprised to see some of them in the neighborhood. You know, when I got off of work and I was going into Whole Foods, there was a little cubby hole and I would see a pack of my students sitting there because they had the free Wi-Fi, you know, access, and they could sit there and, you know, kind of sit, you know, slurp on a coffee for about 2 or 3 hours and hang out, and they had Wi-Fi access. Now it becomes more complicated when it's younger children because they don't have that free access. Now, I'll be honest with you, I haven't had the experience with the younger children, but I know that it has got to be a challenge if it's especially K through fifth grade, you know, because they are not doing things as independently as a high school student is. So this is where your public library really comes in. You know, I will really seek partnership with them.
Do you have anything else to share, girls?
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I think that, if you are in an elementary school and you had maybe, if there was like aftercare there, I'm wondering if you could like wheel in like a laptop cart there where kids could use that. That would be one way to kind of deal with that. And then also, there are some internet providers. I know Comcast here does for, I believe it's students who you know, are on SNAP or that some sort of qualifications, that they are able to do something called Internet Essentials, which is $15 a month for their internet access. And so I always pass on, we have flyers with that information. So check out to see if there is a, if there is some sort of internet provider that has a special deal, and pass that information on. And there are actually more public libraries that are actually handing out like hotspots and stuff. And like, you can like check one out. And I would love to see like school libraries like start doing that. So I think that's actually a really great idea. And I think there's been some school libraries that start that. I think that's a great thing to, you know, advocate for.
And even like, I've heard of stories, lots of stories actually, of even having Wi-Fi on school buses where kids have long ride homes or long rides in, you know, the morning, and, you know, not just, you know, schools helping, but like you said, you know, partnering with public libraries and public organizations, you know, to see how they can help too, I think is so important. Great advice, my friends. And so here's one more, and we'll just spend a few minutes on this. But I thought this was a good one, and I know that you touched base a little bit on it, but Sarah asks, are there ways to fund more digital access for our students and families? Our library budgets are always in flux. So if there's any suggestions that you have, like we use things, you know, like Digital Promise, and we were lucky in Iowa because a lot of our schools have one-to-one programs because of our building and grounds money. But do you have other suggestions for Sarah and the others as well?
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Oftentimes administrators will say there's no money. Like, okay. Well, in Chicago on Saturdays, they would play the school board meeting. And it was at one point in my career, I had to attend because I was a district librarian. Well, I started to really listen to the school board meeting, and then I started reading the minutes to learn where the money is coming from. So if you have, in my case, because I worked in a school district with a high poverty rate, if you have Title I money coming in, the library should be entitled to it in some way, form, or fashion. If you have a Race to the Top grant that's come in through the federal government, the library should be able to obtain some funds for digital access. Even if there's just anything in the budget when it comes with computer technology, they should be able to at least release $5,000, for crying out loud, just for a license for a year. That's nothing in the scheme of a district budget. So my recommendation, of course, write some grants, see if you can find funding out there. But I think it's our responsibility as librarians is not to take these administrators, what they're saying at their word. I will go back and do some reading, and I will read that budget and find that money, because aren't we trained to read as librarians? I mean, really, really think about that. You know, we really need to dig deep. And my experience with administrators is when they recognize that I understand the budget and I'm reading the budget just like they are, then the argument ensues about how much money I'm going to get, because I figured it out. So I think that's what you need to do, is you start reading your budget and then see where those loopholes are. You know, there's another thing. It's escaping me. It's not Title I funds, but it's also dealing with your books in your building. You know, when I can't remember the exact title of it, but I remember fighting with an administrator about, well, you're diverting all those funds to the classroom to purchase the textbook fund. I'm sorry. Some of that Illinois textbook funds, some of that money could have been diverted you know, for the purchase of library books. You know, you could stretch it. It could be diverted in other areas too of your program. So again, it's about educating yourself and understanding what kind of monies are coming into that building, because your school administrator is not going to sing it from a top of a pole of how much money they have. They're going to keep that secret very close to their heart. They don't want to give it away.
So read. Right, Casey. Yeah, it's so true. Do either one of you have anything to share?
Well, I would recommend kind of regular meetings with your administrator. Make sure that you are meeting with him or her regularly and bringing in, you know, infographics that show what you're doing in the library, that show kind of the things that you are accomplishing and the things that your students are learning and the things that they're accomplishing. And I think if you do that regularly, your principal begins to see the value that you bring to the school and that the library brings to the students. And that could be a great help in kind of maybe convincing to give some of that budget, like Casey was talking about, that's available, that could be available.
Yes, grants are great, but like I think Stephanie makes a great point of starting with your administrator and really looking closely at the budget. But I think as you really start to show what you want to do and sharing that vision, not just with your administrator, but with the public, I think you can be persuasive. I mean, while and a lot of times there's a formal grant process, we were able to get a really awesome poster printer, which has just made a tremendous difference in kids like being able to produce, you know, actual poster size posters of their work that they've created. And we were just able to do that just by saying, hey, we would love to have something like this. And I would love to write you a donation letter. Like I would just, and so someone was upgrading their poster printer. They gave us a $10,000 poster printer because they were buying a new one. So a lot of times just, you know, we have to share all the great work we're doing, but also what we could accomplish if we had something else. And not only what we could accomplish, what our students could accomplish. And we always need to keep that at the forefront.
Yeah, that's so true. Like you can't share your story enough. You can't wait to, you know, you can't sit back and wait just for them to come to you and, you know, just keep sharing your story. And especially, you know, one of you said like infographics, I think it was Stephanie. And, you know, like this is a great time of year to do that as we, you know, close out our years and celebrate what we've done all year with end of the year reports and things and get ready for a new year. So fantastic advice. Thank you so much, everybody. And I'm going to share my screen again just so we can go over just a tiny bit of housekeeping and just some fun things that are coming up. Can you see my slides okay? I know they're coming. I can see it. Not super fast here. And so, but as we wait for my slides, don't forget to go back to also, you know, just the hashtag of today and look at what is being shared. And I know I can't wait to share. I've been taking some notes and pictures of what our special guest said too, but just some important keys to share with all of you, just some housekeeping is you can get to the Future Ready Librarian page just from the Future Ready School site. And we have a great page that's being updated often by fantastic Leah, who works with the Alliance of Excellent Education, and things on there like case studies and videos and information, and people are writing blog posts, all kinds of resources on here that are really going to not only help you in the library, but help you advocate also for things like, you know, getting more access to resources and things that your kids might need in their library and within school, like you've been hearing today. Also, make sure that you check out, again, just to mention, the Future Ready Libs hashtag, and of course the TL chat hashtag too. Those are two that I always use when I'm having conversations on Twitter, but also follow Future Ready because there's so many great things being shared. And again, We need to be part of the conversations, not just in the library, but that are happening throughout education if we're going to truly make a difference, you know, as librarians within education and our future of our kids. Also, the Facebook page is amazing. Today, I took the screenshot this morning, and we have over 16,000 members in our Facebook page. And I think the really cool thing about it is that everybody's at a different spot in our journey, and that's okay on here. And we're supportive and champions to each other. And I think that that's really the great thing about the community that is being built. And so if you don't belong to it, please join and keep sharing if you do belong, because it's a great community. Also on Instagram, using that hashtag too is really fun. I love Instagram. I love the visual aspect of it. And so just, you can follow hashtags actually on Instagram. And so put that in there and search it. And then you can follow that hashtag and it will come up in your feed, but also tag the things that you're doing, that you're sharing in your library or professionally. It's really great to see what everybody is doing. I also put together some resources that will be helpful. Some collections by Destiny, one with just resources and tools that we're using. But this one has really been great because I broke it into all the different wedges. And so there's a collection for each one of the wedges. And so in Ensures Equitable Digital Access, I will put this presentation in there, but you'll also find other things in that collection that will be helpful too. And then on this Symbaloo, if there was one thing that I was going to bookmark, I have this bookmarked on my phone and on my computer, bookmark this, because everything that we have talked about and all the webinars are on this Symbaloo. And so we'll share this link at the end. It will be in a blog post. It will be online on the Future Ready Librarian page. But these slides have all of the information in here. And so if you just click on the slides, you'll be able to access all of these different things that we're talking about, including the past webinars and this webinar that we had today. I also started a Future Ready newsletter last week called Fueling Future Ready Librarians. The big thing that I really wanted to point out is if you have questions about things coming up, there's a calendar in here and I will keep it up to date. But as you can see, from now until the end of the year, we already have a lot of great events. And a couple that we're really excited about are the Leadership Summit that is coming up the Saturday before ISTE in the Chicago area. And I know that we still have spots left for this, some spots. And so if you're coming to ISTE or if you're in the area or even just want to come for this event, please sign up. It's going to be awesome. It's our first one that we're having with just lots of great people and leaders in our field kind of leading the way for this day. And so I'm excited about that. Another thing is if you want to, maybe you blog or you've written an article or you have a story to share, please reach out to me and let me know, because we want to put it up on the Future Ready Librarian page and we want to make sure that we celebrate these successes with each other. And so if you have something that you want to share, we would love to have you. But also if you want to take part in a future Twitter chat or webinar, please let me know too if you're interested, because we would love, as I said, to just hear your story. Also, I wanted to share a link just to get to the posters and other resources like this. These can all be found too on the Future Ready Librarian page. And this is a poster that these things go like hotcakes when we have them at conferences and different events. But you can also reach out to your Follett rep if you would like to get some of these for yourself and your school and your libraries, but also you can just download them too online, and you can print them off as well. Also, these great stickers that you can put onto your blog or your digital signature. It's great to always advocate again that, you know, what we're doing in our libraries and what we are as Future Ready Librarians, and so you can grab those there. Now, the next webinar is going to be really exciting because it's going to be a live event, live Facebook event at ISTE, and it's going to be in the Follett booth on Monday, June 25th at 1 o'clock. And so if you are at ISTE, please join us, and it's going to be great because we're going to have, I don't want to totally give it all away, but it's going to be some kind of fun interactive thing with the other Future Ready members in different areas of Future Ready. And so it's going to be great because it's going to be these awesome librarians in our group. And we're going to be against some of these other people in leadership roles. And so I can't wait for that. So please join us for that too. And always, if you have something that you want to share or you have a question or you just want to put up great things that you're doing, remember to use the hashtag and reach out to us too. Website, and you can always find us online through that newsletter too, or just by tweeting me and I can help you. And so thank you so much for joining us to our three amazing guests. You guys are amazing, my friends, and keep doing all the wonderful things to make a difference in the world and for the lives of kids, because you guys are awesome. And thanks everybody else for joining us too, and we hope to see you next at ISTE.